So here we are at Dona Old Graveyard, just outside Glaslough, County Monaghan. I'm Shirley Clerkin, the Heritage Officer with Monaghan County Council, and today we're going to be talking about headstones, their symbolism and their folk art at this wonderfully evocative historic place.
My name's Paddy McQuaid, and I have a particular interest because of lots of McQuaids that are buried here, but not just McQuaids. There's Christian, probably non-Christian, and people of various denominations buried together here.
My name is Mark Kelly. I'm a local sculptor. I work with many materials, but a particular interest area of mine is with stone, and I would have studied lots of the local history and old artifacts and stonework in particular here at Dona, so it forms a large part of my learning.
So we'll head off now in through the gate into Dona Graveyard. So I think we'll start at the back end of this graveyard. So we're in a round enclosure on top of a drumlin, which is quite common in Monaghan, obviously, it being a drumlin county. And we start at the back of the graveyard where the older headstones are. And this is a former, you know, monastic ecclesiastical site. And in more recent times, it's become an actual graveyard. And that was typical of these sites in that they became infilled with memorial stones to the local community who lived here. But previous, really, to the 1700s or late 1600s, there were no headstones in graveyards. People were buried communally in sites away from churches often, and there wasn't the same sort of ownership over your own bones. It was considered that once your soul had departed this life, that then it was you were to look after the soul more than the actual physical remains themselves. So it was really only when people started going to graveyards to visit them, to pray for their ancestors' remains, really kind of in the 1600s, 1700s, that memorials started coming into fashion. But in South Ulster particularly, they came into fashion much earlier than they did in the rest of Ireland. And that was because of a kind of a, I suppose, a travelling Scottish Presbyterian mainly group of people that arrived here and brought with them a new tradition of inscribing memorials to family members. And that's why we find a lot of early headstones in Monaghan particularly, and indeed in Dona here. And the earliest memorial here is from 1666. So Paddy and Mark, we'll head over to the back of the graveyard now to have a look at some of the older memorials, starting from the ones in 1666 and onwards.
The memorial over the McKenna grave, I'm wondering, did it actually, was it put in place in 1666, or was it a feature that was put in place by the clan at a later stage? My guess is that it might have been the mid-1700s when Reverend McKenna, who had attended the Irish Brigade in the Battle of Fontenoy, he was there in 1745, but he was back here as the parish priest here in Dona in 1746. So I just question whether that memorial slab stone was...
And it's quite a large slab stone, isn't it?
It
and
is, yeah.
There are three for 1666, isn't there? There's one Presbyterian, I think, or Scottish, certainly, and then there were the McConlin, is it, or Conlin and McKenna.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that maybe there was a little bit of keeping up with the Joneses into trying to then, if someone, maybe their families were buried here for generations and they saw another headstone creeping in, that they too then wanted to make their mark to show that they too had hereditary kind of rights to be buried here. So that could be very right, what Paddy's saying there about that headstone.
The fact that the stone is quite flat, it looks almost modern compared to some of the ones that in the early period of the 1700s where there's real fine artwork involved. You know, there's no fine artwork apart from the inscription on that stone.
So if you see, as we come along here, you'll see we're passing a lot of these... quite early headstones, some of them, where we would have some of these cherubs, shall we say, on them. So these stylized cherubs, just with a head and the wings on either side. And these are quite common in Monaghan graveyards. And these are more of the optimistic symbols you find on the graveyards in Monaghan. And the cherubs can be cheerful, some of them are sad, some of them look really depressed. But in general, the idea is that you're looking at a round face with the eyes and the wings on either side, and that visualizes and reminds the viewer that the person's soul is ascending into heaven. And you can feel it, it's quite a depth of inscription on this one. I mean, this one's covered in lichen and moss. It's quite a neat little headstone. And, you know, Mark would have a good idea how you go about inscribing something like this, or even with this one over behind, which has the two cherubs, the winged cherubs, and then Adam and Eve praying on top of it there. You see that one? That's quite evocative, isn't it, Mark?
It is, yeah. They're really, Donna particularly, it's just great examples. And some of the, I suppose, what has saved a lot of the sandstone headstones here is the forward-leaning aspect of them, in that the weather really hasn't got at the caravans, and the sandstone has remained, especially the good quality sandstone that would have been quarried locally and transported here. But the caravans are wonderful for their period, and they're just, even the lettering, the V cut lettering, which was done, it is done, you know, in a very, very good fashion for the period of time that we're discussing. Certainly, you know, by today's standard, they're very inspirational pieces to come and study.
And what do you think of the little praying figures and their little robes and everything that they're wearing, and the way their feet are? You know, they've taken a lot of attention to detail, haven't they?
Yeah, they're very stylized and they're very artistic in their approach. They're not formal as maybe you would see nowadays. They're not, I suppose, picked out of a catalogue. They're just maybe drawn on, I would imagine, a lot of them. By the artist. I know you do see a similar style of a face and winged feature, but a lot of them have their own individual characteristics and carving style sometimes, which is great to see their individuality each time.
Would it be fair to say that sandstone would have been the stone of choice because in the day there were no such thing as cordless through the equipment and so on? You certainly wouldn't be working with a piece of marble.
No, I think sandstone, and obviously because in Monaghan there does seem to be a rich vein of it actually, which we were blessed with that, I suppose, through the years, and it was quarried quite a lot in all the various parishes and in a lot of different localities. So the sandstone around here is of good quality, and you can see how it's remained to this day, you know, in a lot of the local graveyards. So they were blessed with that, and the fact that it's always easy to work with, that was a major draw, I imagine, for the stonecutters.
And if you're going to make something like this, Mark, now just as one example, what sort of tools would you use for that?
Well, I know myself, I'm blessed, I suppose, with the modern tooling, but back then, we all come back, I suppose, in the finishing of a headstone, we all arrive at the same point now with just our standard chisels. You know, back then they had to clean the face of the stone down to take the rugged shape. They would have used large chisels, you know, 2 inch wide maybe or so, and they would have been just chiseling at the stone for long, long periods to get a level surface almost, where they could start to begin to draw on their designs or score on their templates. So it was a long process just to get the headstone to the point of where it was ready for the artistic approach. After that, it is as it is now for myself, an enjoyable process where you're carving features and low relief. They're not very high relief, they're fairly low relief, but they obviously just have lasted centuries, so you don't always have to go extremely deep, and the detail has stayed on the low relief style very, very well.
And when you think about this, like you're saying, it's leaning forward, but a lot of the headstones in these graveyards have actually inscriptions on the front and on the back, you know, so you can view them from both sides. So if we take a turn around and look the other direction, you'll see that there are so many headstones with inscriptions on the back of them. You were making the most of your piece of stone and you're inscribing on both sides. So we're looking at very much a stylized heraldry or heraldic sort of a thing here. And that was seemingly common in that, you know, the Protestant landed families that came in all had their family crests and, you know, all of that thing to sort of, I suppose, stamp the family with a particularly visual identity, which we're all very familiar now, of course, with, you know, through our own use of social media and everything. Everybody has a brand. And so the Irish families then, of course, started to adopt what they thought would be suitable heraldic images from their families, and some of them were quite made up, but some of them were based on old stories associated with the families, weren't aren't they, Paddy?
When you talk about heraldry and you talk about ones that are distinctively associated with families, you also had families that had different memorial coats for separate parts of their families. I don't know how that would have come about, but they're here in this graveyard.
Well, I suppose everybody wants to identify themselves as a particular branch or as a particular strain, or without using the nicknames on the headstones, maybe they were using their heraldic images instead.
I wonder, were some family members in later years approaching the stonemasons and maybe describing what they thought maybe was the family coat of arms, and there was an artistic maybe approach by each stone cutter into how the crest may have looked, based on maybe only verbal knowledge. I suppose there was no such thing as print-offs, but they were working very much of what the family was asking them to do, and I suppose there may be misinterpretations down through the years of the crest themselves.
Bear in mind, I suppose, that people also maybe mightn't have spoken English or might have been illiterate as well, and that the imagery on the stones is very important to help identify your headstone or your family's plot when it came into fashion, that people did have family plots and they were differentiated like that, so that you could come to a graveyard and look for those images. You were told to look for three hounds and a branch of a tree or whatever, and you knew to go and look for that you'd find your own plot. So we're heading here across by the beautiful elder tree and the yew trees, of course, common in graveyards, to this little headstone, which has got a very deeply carved skull, crossbones, and I think below the surface of the earth, there's either, I think it's a coffin shape down here, and these are part of the mortality symbolism that came in to this part of South Ulster in the early 1700s. And there was, I think it was an early Foster graveyard over in Tidavnet that seemed to start this trend off. But there are skulls, crossbones, there's a coffin, an hourglass, and the bell, the hand bell, which are the five most common mortality symbols used in these graveyards. And they're usually actually on the rear of a headstone. And they are depicting, you know, that, you know, the bell tolls for everyone. Our soul will go, but we'll just be remains that are left. The coffin, obviously. So they're all kind of reminding people to pray for you. Once again, in case you're stuck in purgatory, I suppose, and to pray that your soul will go forward with the up and into the heavens with the cherubs. But they're fantastically done, and different stonemasons had different styles. But look at this one, Mark. This one's got really deep eye sockets,
yeah,
and quite a square little chin, and you know, and incised those, and really quite stylized crossbones, would you say?
Yeah, it's one of the more remarkable ones, I suppose, you'd see. I've seen, I suppose, in Monaghan itself or anywhere maybe, but it's just the high relief aspect too. It's not, I suppose, as common as you would associate from the period, but it survived so well also. But yeah, just the artistic approach of it as well is just brilliantly done. It's so unique. Yeah, it's the high relief aspect definitely makes it a one-off for that period, for me anyway.
That carving's about 2 inches deep.
Yeah, you definitely don't see it. And again, it comes back to, I suppose, the use of sandstone, giving you that aspect. It gives you that ability to, if you need to or you want to go a little bit deeper, you have the option, and you can, I suppose, carve relief or carve the background away fairly quickly. Whereas your limestone or your marbles or granite absolutely don't give you the same freedom or the artistic freedom with it, you know.
So it's great to think that the geology of the area has lent to this ability to be so artistic,
yeah,
and to have such great memorials in these very valued places for the community here, like, isn't it?
Yeah, that's I think that's a huge part. The sandstone, you know, myself would be, you know, the stone of choice always, but then I suppose it has it does discolour and it takes on nature very quickly. But we're blessed, I suppose, now when we come to visit century-old headstones with these beautiful, you know, remains and carvings. But the shadows and everything that they bring on with the nature, they're wonderful. I think they're my own preference, you know, sandstone headstones.
The raised relief work is something that I would say it would be sculptor's nightmare, but especially in those days.
I can imagine with the early tooling, definitely it was, you know, it is a huge achievement, I think, to achieve what they did on this one particularly. You know, very, very early tooling, like we're blessed really with what we have now, but you know, that this is a great example of good craftsmanship and you know, a lovely artistic approach also.
And you see these symbols right over South Monaghan and Clonus, Tidavnet, Errigal True, and then up and into Clogher. And in comparison with the rest of Ireland, for example, you see this rise in these types of headstones coming in the 1720s, 1730s, 1740s, whereas in the rest of the country further south, they weren't really putting up headstones yet. So they are particularly early. If we look here now again, we have this tree of life. I think you can just about see it under the thick cover of lichen, but it's definitely more cherubs and the tree of life, which again was one of these more optimistic type images that they carved onto the stones. And you can see how the lichens have taken on or covered these stones over in this white lichen, which of course is a feature of air quality, you know, the different lichens that grow in the stones. And we shouldn't be, I suppose, afraid of this happening to the stones. They are folk art in a graveyard, these monuments. They've lasted a long time, and you know, to start trying to clean monuments like this with abrasives and even brushes can damage them permanently and can actually expose a fresh face of stone, which will then erode much more quickly, particularly in the changed climate and with the more sort of different types of rainfall that we have, the intense rainfall. So I would say very important, if you're lucky enough to have one of these headstones in your care, whether it's a community group or, you know, as part of your family's, you know, inheritance, to just leave it alone, gently pull away the grass from around it. Don't use a strimmer too close to it because it'll damage it, and certainly please don't clean it. It would be my most important piece of advice. And if you want to do something, you can photograph it using a big torch and it'll bring up a lot of the inscriptions, or come October time, November time, early morning is a super time for taking photographs of headstones with the low slanting morning light as well, just if you want to have permanent records of them. So we're heading over now to a very fine upstanding headstone. It's nearly the same height as myself actually, and it's to Mr. Delaney, and he was one of the stonemasons that are actually buried in this graveyard. So there's a great tradition of, you know, of quarries and stonemasonry in this area, and Paddy will tell us about it now.
Arthur Delaney, from what I can gather, worked in a quarry at Glennon, and as far as I know there was a Delaney connection with Derry Lay, where a Delaney lady lived, and that quarry was used up until about 100 years ago.
It's enormous, this headstone, isn't it?
It's taller than me.
I'm 5'6".
It's extremely modern by comparison to all the rest.
I love these cherubs. Like, they're a modern take on the old cherubs we have in the graveyard, but they look like they're actually kind of flouncing towards, I mean, with all due respect, they're flouncing towards the crucified Christ on the cross here. And, you know, you can actually put your finger in under his arms. You know, it's so creatively done. And then these beautiful, I would call these sun rays on the corners. Also kind of, you know, talking, you know, which is a lot of sun imagery on Irish monuments. And then these columns are kind of pilasters, I suppose, on the top of this triangular form or pediment on the top. It's a very modern but architecturally kind of taking from architecture or classical architecture, this headstone. Fabulous, isn't it, Mark?
It's a fantastic piece. It's one of the, yeah, one of the more special ones you'll see. And I suppose the fact that it's maybe almost all and entirely carved from one slab, it's amazing what they achieved with it. You know, the extra little pendants are added on maybe on the top, but do you know, they achieved a lot in their carving and relief work. You know, it's three-dimensional in the crucifix part, you know, where Jesus is, his arms are three-dimensional. So you really don't see, is, you know, that sort of work done it very often, if at all, from that period. And you know, even the lettering itself, the V-cut lettering, do you know, they have italics and standard writing, and it's just beautifully done. They really exhibited their craftsmanship on this piece. Even the slight little rope edging that goes around it, everything's done to the highest standard that, you know, you really could achieve.
I know, it's perfect, isn't it? It's so even. I mean, every last piece of it is so exact, isn't it? Precise.
And like even rope edging, I know that's a small detail, but I have copied and worked from headstones that Delaney's have done, and rope edging is a significant feature for me on Celtic crosses that they've done. And it is funny, a skill that is dead, but I would have photographed and studied their work and measured it out, and you know, they showed everyone how it should be done, and
be their signature.
It's a fantastic part of their craft. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's really good to know. So if I was looking for Delaney work, I should look for this rope. Is that right, Paddy? Yeah.
I've seen out in Carcrin, I've seen a fairly old headstone, and the rope edge now in the Celtic cross is just fantastic, and they incorporate different features even within the rope edging, which is very unusual. Also,
I noticed there in the figure of Jesus crucified, his feet appear in the Greek style, if I'm not mistaken, maybe not. It could have been pre-medieval, but he's copied. If he has copied the Greek style, is pre-medieval, you know.
Yeah, he's copied the feet, because they use the positioning of the feet to date different early crosses and things like that to determine the age of them, depending on this particular feature. There's lots of scholarly works done just on looking at figures of Christ on different bits of high crosses and things. But this is, I mean, it's a beautiful fitting headstone to have at the very gate of the graveyard, isn't it? So we'll go and have a look at a few more headstones, and we'll come across this way through Dona Graveyard. The Heritage at the Heart podcast series is supported by the Heritage Council and Monaghan County Council.